Hello, this is Lois Pausch reading the Vermilion County News for Friday, April the 6th, 2018. And the first article has the headline, County Teen Pregnancy Rate Dips, Numbers Hit Single Digits for First Time. Dateline Danville, the local teen pregnancy rate has steadily decreased for several years. However, for the first time since the state began collecting data in 1970, it's hit single digits. According to the Illinois Department of Public Health, just 9.5% of Vermilion County babies in 2016 were born to teenage mothers. That's 97 of the recorded 1,021 total births. It's not as low as I'd like it to be, but it's certainly a milestone, said Douglas Toole, Public Health Administrator for the Vermilion County Health Department. Local teen birth rates can lead to higher high school graduation rates and fewer children living in poverty, and that can benefit the entire community. The statewide average is at 5.1%, putting the Vermilion County rate at almost double that, though pregnancies at both the state and local levels have been dropping. Melissa Rome, community liaison for the health department, said she doesn't think there's just one single reason that can take credit for the decrease. Locally, we have fewer uninsured, so teens have better access to health care and birth control, she said. Teens can get answers to many of their health questions privately through their phones, and community leaders are developing youth activities and programs. One program is I Sing the Body Electric, named after a Walt Whitman poem, a program of OSF Healthcare Sacred Heart Medical Center, and which surveys Vermilion County teens. Toole said that while some statistics can be alarming or hard to hear, they're important to acknowledge. They are important to acknowledge. I guess they're not going to go anywhere with that. The health department also partnered with OSF, Sacred Heart, Carle Foundation Hospital, and the local United Way to develop a teen pregnancy work group that meets regularly. As a parent of a teenager, trying to get information out of teens can be challenging, Toole said. Just as important as community action groups and programs is the education teenagers receive in the classroom. Toby Gleave, a health teacher at Northridge Middle School, said students learn about these topics in both 7th and 8th grades. They learn about abstinence and sex education, he said. The Danville Housing Authority goes to Vermilion County Schools as part of its Draw the Line, Respect the Line program. DHA Director of Family Services Tamara Forthenberry said they were first awarded a grant 5 years ago to initiate a teen pregnancy prevention curriculum after the health department's family planning clinic was closed. Sixth graders learn about peer pressure relating to alcohol and drugs. Then in 7th and 8th grade, they're introduced to the consequences of unplanned sex and taught prevention methods for sexually transmitted diseases in pregnancy. The curriculum teaches that not having sex is ultimately the healthiest sexual limit to set for oneself. The biggest principle takeaway is setting your own personal limits, Forthenberry said. Consent comes in when talking about someone else's limits. No, even from the shyest person, means no. And you can't go beyond someone's no. The students are receptive, Forthenberry said, and enjoy the situational role-playing exercises. They have the opportunity to ask questions anonymously on paper, which will be addressed and answered throughout the lesson. We see a lot of attentiveness and some shyness in asking questions, and we come in telling them that talking about sex can be uncomfortable, she said. But we make the lessons fun and tell them there is no right or wrong. And the next article has the headline, We're Like Family, AmeriCorps Helps with Trees Restore. Dateline Danville, the 8 AmeriCorps National Civilian Community Corps, that's NCCC, members in the city for 3 more weeks of their 7-week service work here have found their first assignment location to be a little different weather-wise than they expected. It's cold, said 21-year-old Andre Green of Miami, Florida. But for 22-year-old Brian Hilk of Plainfield, Illinois, he's just a few hours from home and knows about the state's finicky spring weather. Joseph Lewis, 21, of Maryland, said they at first were using their noses to touch iPads for their outside work of taking inventory of trees for the city and parks and on public property in neighborhoods because they were trying to keep their hands warm in their gloves. They then got gloves that can be used to touch electronic devices. Overall, the group with the team name Oak 7 said that they've loved their time in Danville and the city. Habitat for Humanity and the public have welcomed them. Everyone has been very hospitable, said Trinity Heindel of Stevens Point, Wisconsin. The city and Habitat for Humanity of Danville applied to have a team work in the city again this year. Past teams have worked at Kickapoo State Park and also with Habitat. The team is staying in the old firehouse on Walnut Street. AmeriCorps NCCC is a full-time team-based residential national service program for young adults ages 18 to 24 who want to give back to communities in need at different locations across the country. There are more than 50,000 members serving in AmeriCorps NCCC, AmeriCorps Vista, and more than 900 other AmeriCorps state and national programs throughout the country. Service projects can range from rural environmental projects to urban projects or projects after national disasters. AmeriCorps NCCC members address critical needs related to natural and other disasters, infrastructure improvement, environmental stewardship, and conservation and urban and rural development. Casey Houston, team leader, said the team members serve for 10 months. They also train for 1 month at the start of their service, where they helped clean the Cedar Rapids, Iowa library. They haven't received their next assignment yet. Katie Yankowski of New Jersey said they can work on various projects meeting community needs. On weekends, they also have helped at the city's Easter egg hunt and will be helping the city and Tom Halloran with tree plantings at Winter Park. The city of Danville has the members half a week in parks and neighborhoods, and the other half of the week they are primarily helping on the new Habitat Restore location on Vermilion Street. Steve Lane, superintendent of community improvement with the city, said they've started a citywide public tree inventory. We have a lot of trees in Danville we are responsible for that are on public property, and you can't manage something if you don't know what you have, Lane said. The tree members identify the tree, measure the tree, rate it as to the health condition and structure condition, and identify problems. If it is blocking the way of a stop sign, impeding a sidewalk, or interfering with utility lines. This will give us a wonderful tool that we will have on our GIS, that's Geographic Information System layer, where we can actually interface it with our sewer maps. If we have a sewer problem, we can identify, hey, there's three trees over the top of this, Lane said. The team has taken data on about 2,635 trees by midweek. On Wednesday, they completed three parks. The next park on the list was Espenscheid Park and Fetch Dog Park. The team places pink lines or dots near the trees after they are done collecting data. Lane said the pink dots don't mean the city is cutting the trees down. It means they've been there and counted it, he said. Lane also says if you see these people in your neighborhood out collecting data, they're wearing the yellow vests, stop them and thank them. At the Restore, the team said they've been doing a lot of painting, building walls, making the floors smooth, and doing other renovation work. Joseph Lewis of Maryland said Habitat and city officials have been great. We're like family, he said. The group doesn't have a lot of downtime, but one of the activities they had planned today was to go roller skating. And now for the obituaries. And the first is for Darlene Morgan, 72, of Ridge Farm, who died on April 3rd, 2018. A celebration of her life will be held at 3 p.m. Sunday, April 8th. That's tomorrow, or day after tomorrow, at Sunset's Houghton Leisure Funeral Home, 200 East West Street, Georgetown. Visitation will be held from 1 p.m. to 3 p.m. Sunday prior to her service at the funeral home. She will be laid to rest in Sunset Memorial Park Museum on Monday, April 9th. And the next is for Patricia Long, 75, of Danville, who died on Wednesday, April the 4th, 2018. A celebration of life service will be held at 1 p.m. Sunday, April 8th, at Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center, 3940 North Vermilion Street in Danville. And the next is for Brittany Suzanne Ure, who died on March 30th, 2018. A memorial service will commence at 1 p.m. Saturday, that's tomorrow, at April 7th, at 21st Century Worship Center, 533 East Main Street. Officiating will be Pastor George Dowell. Leek & Sons Funeral Home is in charge of arrangements. And the next is for H. Melvin Mel, in quotation marks, Stevens, 82, of Tilton, who died on Monday, April the 2nd. Graveside rites will be at 10 a.m. Monday at Oak Ridge Cemetery in Catlin, with Ed Ross officiating. Catlin American Legion will provide military honors. Visitation is from 2 to 4 p.m. Sunday at Robeson Chapel in Catlin. Memorials may be made to the Catlin Historical Society. And the next is for Edwina J. Westwater, 87, of Fishers, Indiana, formerly of Danville, who died on Thursday, April the 3rd, 2018. A celebration of her life will be held at 3 p.m. on Sunday, April 6th, at Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center, 3940 North Vermilion Street in Danville. A visitation will be from 1 to 3 p.m. prior to the service. A prior graveside service will be held at graveside service will be held at Spring Hill Cemetery. And the next is for James Klaus Jordan, 88, of Frederick, Colorado, who died on March 26, 2018. There will be a private graveside ceremony later this year in Danville. Please make donations to Wounded Warrior Project in lieu of flowers. And the next is for Jewel M. J.M. Lowe, 79, of Danville, who died on Saturday, March 31st, 2018, in Danville. There will be, per his wishes, he will be cremated. There will be a memorial visitation from noon to 1 p.m. Friday, April 6th, at Pape Family Funeral Home, 10 East William Street in Danville, with memorial service to follow at 1 p.m. today at Pape Family Funeral Home. And now I go back to news articles, and this one has the headline, DHS Seeks Veterans for Diplomas. Dateline Danville. Each spring, the Danville High School Registrar reaches out to veterans who attended DHS but left school before graduation to serve in the armed forces, veterans of World War II, the Korean conflict, or the Vietnam War who were honorably discharged may obtain their high school diploma if they wish. The high school has made the diplomas available for the past 22 years. We didn't have any veterans receive diplomas last year, DHS Registrar D. Freed said. Veterans who are interested in receiving a diploma may write to Freed, DHS Registrar, 202 East Fairchild Street, Danville, Illinois, 61832, or call 444-1507. Requests must be received by Freed by Monday, April the 30th. To receive a diploma, a copy of the Honorable Discharge Paper, that is DD Form 214, is required. Once the discharge papers are submitted to Freed, she will research the former student's school records. Freed will order the former student's transcript from the DHS records office, and after all documents are in order, a diploma will be made available. Veterans can decide whether they want to receive their diploma at an award ceremony during the annual Veterans Concert at 7 p.m. May 10th in the Dick Van Dyke Auditorium at DHS. Diplomas also may be conferred posthumously, with a diploma being awarded to a family member. A few years ago, a veteran's wife applied for a diploma on behalf of her late husband, and her daughter walked across the stage to receive it. Veterans do not receive a 2018 diploma, but rather one that reflects the year the veteran would have graduated. And the next article has the headline, Bailey Academy Students to Learn About Jobs, Dateline Danville. Students at Kenneth D. Bailey Academy next week will experience what it's like in the real world of work. During the Academy's 6th annual Career Day on Friday, April 13th, representatives from more than a dozen different companies and fields of interest in Danville and the surrounding areas will speak to students about what they do for a living and what job opportunities are available. Principal Tracy Cherry originally came up with the idea to organize a career day and students offer suggestions on the types of business they want to know more about. All of the kids in the building will participate, Cherry said. That includes 85 7th graders through 12th graders currently housed at the Kenneth D. Bailey Academy, 502 East Main Street. The kids complete a survey ahead of time and select the top four areas they want to visit. Career Day Chairperson Valerie Kegaris, a Bailey Academy high school teacher, said. Students will spend the entire day attending career session workshops, three sessions in the morning and three in the afternoon, learning about fields in which they are interested. It gets them to thinking about what they would like to do when they get older, so they can make better choices among the way, Kedris said. During each 40-minute workshop, business professionals will make presentations covering everything from what to expect in a particular field and the education needed for a job to various other topics related to their company or field of interest. A question and answer session will follow the workshop presentations. They will tell the students how they got there and what they do, Kedris said. On the morning of Career Day, each student will be given a packet of 50 additional questions they can ask the presenter about a career, such as education and training requirements, working conditions, and pay expectations, she said. I'm always amazed at how attentive the students are, Kedris said. It gives them exposure to professionals, she added. We tell them the people you meet today and make connections with might be someone you sit across from in the future. The companies and individuals participating in this year's Career Day will include CCMSI, Susie Condor, a Veterans Affairs Recreation Therapist, cosmetologist Monica Conrad with Beyond Beauty Studio, Danville Area Community College, Danville Police Department, Kohl's store manager Christina Dempsey, Tammy Wilson with First Methodist, with First Midwest, Amy McKinley with Senior Source Counseling, Penny Hunter with McLean Midwest, Parkview Healthcare from Covington, Indiana, District 118 School Board member Shannon Schroeder, who will talk about entrepreneurialism, Sterling Auto Body, U.S. Army Vermilion County Animal Shelter, and Vermilion County Coroner Jane McFadden. And the next article has the headline, City Officials Discuss Grant to Hire Fighter Fires. Dateline Danville, as the city prepares to hire more probationary police officers, Ward 3 Alderwoman Sherry Pickering asked City Administration this week to put on next week's Public Works Committee meeting agenda a resolution to authorize submitting a staffing for adequate fire and emergency response, that's SAFER, grant application to hire more firefighters. Mayor Scott Eisenhower met with firefighters Wednesday to discuss a proposal. Eisenhower said they are going to further discuss some additional items brought up at the meeting. With a recent resignation of a firefighter who left for another department out of state, the fire department has 40 firefighters. It had been budgeted at 41. Eisenhower said a decision hasn't been made whether to hire any more. If aldermen would agree to enter into a SAFER grant agreement with the Federal Emergency Management Agency, the grant can have requirements about the number of firefighters the city must hold onto. Pickering said the urgency for the request is due to the deadline for the current grant application period approaching on April 27th. It would save us money on our overtime, she said. We can replace the ones who are retiring with younger ones. In other business this week, the city council approved, and there's a whole list of things here, a budget amendment in the city's engineering and urban services division regarding Downtown Danville Incorporated paying back its half of the $30,000 expense for the consultant used for the downtown tax increment financing district. Ward 2 Alderman Rick Strebing asked if the DDI will be able to pay the money back. Eisenhower said the city is setting it up front to withhold $3,500 from the $10,000 payment it gives annually to DDI. The remaining $4,000 is expected to be paid by DDI after the Summer Sounds concert season. DDI already has paid $7,500 of the cost. Amending the general city budget to show the city is estimated to receive about $80,000 from the Municipal Electric Civic Contribution Fee as part of a new 3-year electricity rates. The money will go toward moving lots, accepting $4,400 in a highway safety grant through the Illinois Department of Transportation. The grant will allow for a special enforcement detail to hire back police officers to focus on cell phone usage and distracted driving. Establishing a small business revolving loan program citywide with guidelines and authorizing a budget amendment for the Small Business Revolving Loan Fund and transfer funds to the Community Block Grant Program. Enacting and adopting supplements to the Code of Ordinances. And the next is an article with the headline, Illinois Farmers to Plant More Corn Than Soybeans. Dateline Bloomington. The latest report from the U.S. Department of Agriculture says Illinois farmers are expected to continue planting more corn than soybeans despite the trend changing nationally. USDA's prospective plantings estimated said there will likely be 11 million corn acres planted in Illinois this year, about 200,000 fewer acres than last year. The Pantograph reported the USDA predicted 10.6 million soybean acres in the state this year, which is about the same as 2017. The USDA predicted that farmers nationwide will plant 88 million corn acres and 89 million soybean acres this year. Farmers across the U.S. have been shifting away from corn and toward soybeans since 2012, said Gary Schnittke, a farm management specialist and a University of Illinois professor. The change is likely because of higher returns for soybeans than corn, he said. Value summarized from the Illinois Farm Business Farm Management indicate that corn was more profitable in most years from 2001 to 2012, he said. From 2014 onwards, soybeans have been more profitable than corn. The weather can also impact what farmers plant, said Jenny Menninga, a certified crop advisor and chairwoman of the Illinois Soybean Association and Outreach Committee. If we have a late spring, farmers then tend to plant more soybeans, she said. But soybean farmers are concerned about how trade issues between U.S. and China will affect the industry. China recently proposed tariffs on soybeans in retaliation to President Donald Trump's announcement of plans to impose tariffs on imported steel and aluminum. China's proposed tariffs would devastate the industry, according to the American Soybean Association, a lobbying group that represents 21,000 soybean producers. The group said China buys a third of U.S. soybeans. And now, an advice column. And the first letter reads, Dear Annie, my 52-year-old stepdaughter is on drugs and has been for 20 years. Her mom has had her removed from our home 4 or 5 times, but she is now living back here. She is causing so much stress to the whole family, and we do not know where to go for help. She refuses to go to any type of rehab. She is paranoid, barricading herself in her bedroom with a dresser nailed against the door such that she has to enter from outside the house. She is becoming physically abusive to her mom, who is frail. She was once arrested for physically abusing an elderly gentleman. We, as well as her younger sister and her family, are at our wits' end as to what to do, where to go, and whom to contact for help with her. Suggestions, please. We must do something before it is too late. And it's signed, Need Help. And the answer, Dear Need Help, I'm so sorry you're going through this, and I can tell you're at a point of desperation. It's painful, scary, and frustrating to feel as though you're at the mercy of a family member's addiction and mental illness. But you do not have to be. It's time to take back your home and ensure the safety of your wife. Your stepdaughter poses a threat to your wife's safety, and this constitutes an emergency. So contact the authorities to remove her from the house again. For further guidance, call the National Alliance on Mental Health Helpline, 800-950-6264. And then the next letter reads, Dear Annie, your response to We Deserve Happiness was good for some situations, but may have missed one serious reason a widow's adult children might object to his new relationship with her. Mom may be suffering from the early or middle stages of dementia. These symptoms can be well hidden from new people in a person's life, but adult children would be very aware of the progression of the disease and would be right to be protective of their mother's well-being. My mom suffered with vascular dementia for 10 years before recently passing. She was very good at hiding her symptoms, even with some family members, and faking her familiarity with a person or situation, giving outward appearances that she was just fine. In reality, her disease was progressing, and she confided to my brother and me that her brain was just not working as it used to. We had to keep a close and protective eye on her, especially when new people came into the picture, because of the high risk of someone's taking advantage of her sweet and giving nature, and several did try. Signed, Dawn. The answer, Dear Dawn, I am so sorry for your loss. I would never discourage children from protecting their parent in such a situation. Bless you for looking out for your mom just as she once looked out for you. And this is this is written by Annie Lane. And now another advice column. And the article has the title. Okay, hold on. I was at only 27 minutes, and I decided I needed negotiating flexible visitation time. My ex and I have been divorced for a year, but she is completely inflexible when it comes to occasionally changing our visitation schedule. There are times when I would like to take my son to a baseball game, but if the game does not fall on my scheduled visitation day, we are out of luck. Give me some tips to approach my ex so I can spend some quality time doing the things my son and I enjoy. After a couple has been divorced for only a year, anger and resentment usually guide decision-making, and it's not surprising your ex doesn't want to cooperate. You're both still dancing around each other, jockeying for position. Divorce can make you feel powerless, and your ex saying no is an easy way for her to regain her own personal power. Problem is, unless she already has plans for your son, denying you a little extra time is very bad ex-etiquette. It's being spiteful, ex-etiquette for parents' rule number 6, don't be spiteful. Therefore, the decision is not based on the best interest of the child. Good ex-etiquette for parents' rule number 1 is put the children first, and staying flexible with your child's parenting plan is a great way to do just that. Being flexible can help relieve your child's stress about going back and forth between divorced parents, not to mention your and mom's stress because you can't yet cooperate while co-parenting. Planning something special on purpose when the child is scheduled to be with the other parent is very bad ex-etiquette. Manipulation is never in the best interest of the child. To approach your ex with positive result, have a specific request in mind. Say the baseball game you mentioned. Next, ask for what you want and be specific. I have special tickets for a baseball game on Wednesday night, and I would really like to take Billy, but I know it's his time with you. now put the ball in her court. Do you have a suggestion how we can rearrange visitation days so that Billy can go to the game? He loves baseball, and you know it will make him very happy. That's it. No editorializing. By saying those few simple words, you have acknowledged that she has control of the situation without losing your dignity, and you have explained that it would make your son happy if she could be flexible. This has been Lois Pausch reading the Vermilion County News for Friday, April 6th, 2018. I look forward to reading with you again soon.